Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 and H1 FY 2026 earnings conference call of Piramal Finance Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. The results material are available on exchanges and the company's website, and you may refer to them during the discussion. Please note that today's discussion may include certain forward-looking statements, which must be viewed in conjunction with the risk and uncertainties that the company faces. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are subject to uncertainty and changes. On the call today, we have with us Mr. Anand Piramal, Executive Chairman, Mr. Jairam Sridharan, MD and CEO, Mr. Rupen Jhaveri, Group President, Mr. Jagdeep Mallareddy, CEO, Retail Lending, Mr. Yesh Nadkarni, CEO, Wholesale Lending, Mr. Vikash Singhla, CFO, and Mr. Ravi Singh, Head of Investor Relations and Strategy. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Piramal for his comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. This is a significant moment for us. Our first earnings call as Piramal Finance Limited following the merger of Piramal Enterprises with Piramal Finance in September. With this transition, my father, Mr. Ajay Piramal, has moved on from his role as the chairman of this company and continues to guide us as the chairman of the Piramal Group. I want to take a moment to acknowledge his remarkable journey from his beginnings in textiles in the Middle East to founding, scaling, and transforming the pharmaceutical and financial services businesses over the last 40 years. Under his stewardship, the combined market cap of our finance and pharma businesses has grown nearly 210 times since 1992 versus 22 times for the Nifty 50, delivering a 17% CAGR for our investors. More than the numbers, he has deeply shaped our values, culture, and purpose. I want to thank him for his leadership and look forward to his continued wisdom and guidance in the future. Today, I feel privileged to lead Piramal Finance at what I believe is a pivotal moment. We are among India's fastest-growing upper-layer NBFCs with a total growth book of 86,000 crores. We are privileged to have served over 5 million customers, more than the population of that of New Zealand, Singapore, and Norway, and disbursed over 2.5 million life-changing loans or high-impact loans across the underserved segments in areas such as affordable housing and business loans and microfinance. With the structured reduction of the legacy real estate book to less than 6% of our total AUM and our high-tech plus high-touch model and a strong team, we have, I believe, the foundation to deliver a balanced outcome in growth, profitability, and risk over the next three to five years and beyond. We continue to invest strategically, expanding branches and embedding AI and analytics across operations with an ambition to double our AUM to more than 1.5 lakh crores in 3 years by FY 2028. Our priority in the next few years is to grow profits steadily while achieving a sustainable ROAUM north of 3% in steady state. With that, I'll hand over to our new CEO and MD, Jairam, and his team to share the detailed financials and outlook.
Thank you, Anand. Hello, everyone. As Anand highlighted, as a company, we are introducing today a framework for value creation and long-term alignment with our shareholders. If you look at slide 3 in our presentation, you can see the framework clearly laid out, the framework of growth, profitability and predictability. These are the three drivers of value creation for Piramal Finance in our view. Superior AUM growth, improving profitability towards our steady state targets, and improving predictability of our risk and earnings trajectories. To support these value drivers, we are building a future-proof AI-native company through a set of initiatives that we call Piramal.ai. You should expect to be updated on this blueprint regularly in the quarters ahead. On the growth driver, which is the first value driver, we are targeting doubling of our AUM in 3 years to more than 1.5 lakh crores by FY28. If you look at page 4, you can see that we are progressing steadily on this dimension of growth with strong tailwinds on both disbursements and AUM growth. On profitability, I would point you to slide 5. Our aspiration is to eventually deliver a return on AUM of more than 3%, as Anand mentioned, with a target AUM to equity of 4.5 to 5x. As you can see here, our trajectories on OPEX, TPOP, ROAUM, and AUM to equity are all strong and are aligned well towards these long-term goals that we have laid out. On predictability, I would refer you to slide 6. As you can see on the right-hand side, our consolidated PAT has now been steadily growing for the last 7 quarters after a prior period of intense volatility. We expect this journey of steady growth and ROAUM expansion to be predictable and to deliver steady earnings and stable risk. In September this year, we unveiled Piramal.ai, our enterprise AI strategy. You should refer to slide 7 for progress on this strategy. As we disclosed a month ago, we currently have about 45 scaled and live AI use cases at this moment. As shown on the slide, we see 5 key impact areas: underwriting outcomes getting better, productivity getting better, growth staying very strong, customer experience improving, and software development getting bigger, better and better and quicker to help us build more. In Q2 FY26, we have made strong progress on all the drivers of our value creation framework. Piramal Finance delivered a profit after tax of 327 crores in the quarter, up 101% YOY. The negative drag of our legacy business continues to soften every quarter, resulting in our growth business PBT of 344 crores being almost the same as our consolidated PBT of 330 crores. In our retail business, disbursements grew very strongly by 36% year-on-year. This drove retail AUM growth also by 36% year-on-year coincidentally. With wholesale 2.0 AUM up 43%, our growth AUM was overall up 37% year-on-year, and consolidated AUM was up 22% year-on-year. So on the whole, this has been a quarter of 22% AUM growth and 100% PAT growth. Cost of borrowings was an important story during the quarter, and it dipped by 19 basis points on a QOQ basis and fell below 9% after a 5-quarter period where it was elevated above that level. Growth business NIM was up 10 bps QOQ. Asset quality was stable across retail and wholesale businesses, both in terms of delinquency as well as in terms of credit costs. Led by the continued improvement in retail OPEX to AUM, and Jagdeep will speak about this in a minute, growth business ROAUM continues to improve steadily. ROAUM was 1.7% in Q2 versus 1.5% in Q1 and 1.4% in FY25. As shown on slide 13, at the end of FY25, we shared our 5 targets for the year on AUM, AUM mix, and total consolidated PAT. With the first half of FY26 numbers in the bag, we are well on track to meet all these targets. As you are aware, PFL stock is currently in blackout period, after the merger of PEL with PFL and allotment of PFL shares to PEL shareholders. We expect listing of PFL stock in early November, subject to the final regulatory approvals that we are awaiting. It typically takes 40 to 45 days since the record date of the transaction. Our record date was 23rd September. With this, I hand over the call to our CEO of Retail Business, Jagdeep Mallareddy, to talk through our performance there. He'll be followed by Vikas, who will discuss our wholesale business and financial performance, respectively. Jagdeep.
Thank you, Jairam. The strong start for our retail lending business in Q1 further gained pace in Q2. We had our lifetime high disbursements in Q2 FY26. At 10,954 crores, disbursements were up 36% YOY. Our flagship mortgage business, comprising affordable housing loans and LAP, grew by 37% YOY and crossed the 50,000 crore mark in AUM. Mortgages account for 56% of the total AUM of the company and 68% of retail AUM. On a QOQ basis, the disbursement momentum accelerated in UBL and digital loan businesses, while salaried PL maintained the earlier strong momentum. AUM across our unsecured retail products were thus up by 31% YOY. Moving on to our credit risk performance, as you can see on slide number 23, 90+ DPD in retail at 0.8% is within the narrow range we have maintained consistently over the last 3.5 years. Secured lending products had a stable quarter on most risk metrics. The improvement seen for the overall unsecured businesses in Q4 FY25 has continued into Q1 and Q2 of FY26. Trends for digital loans and microfinance improved significantly in Q2 FY26. Unsecured business loans and used cars are the two pockets of the portfolio that need closer monitoring. Unsecured business loans risk was stable in Q2, even as it is at a slightly elevated level, similar to that seen in FY25. Used cars risk was stable quarter on quarter after an unusual uptick seen in Q1. We had some favorable impact of ECL rebalancing in Q1 FY26. Adjusted for that, the credit costs were stable in Q2 versus Q1. Vikash will share more details on this in his commentary. As shown on slide number 20, our customer franchise grew by 23% YOY to 5.2 million customers. We capture a significant portion of our customer originations for future cross-sell opportunities. In Q2, as unsecured disbursements picked up, we were able to keep our sourcing from cross-sell in the 25 to 30% range. We expect this number to further materially improve over the coming years. As shown on slide number 22, over the last 10 quarters, we have consistently reduced our retail OPEX to AUM ratio from 6.5% in Q4 FY23 to 3.9% in Q2 FY26. We thus met our medium-term guidance of 3.5 to 4% ahead of our expectation. We have now refreshed the retail OPEX to AUM target downward by 25 basis points to 3.25 to 3.75. As shown on the same slide, AUM yield in retail has been broadly stable at around 13.3%. The reported fee, which was impacted by the processing fee amortization in FY25, is gradually normalizing, led by stable underlying fee collection. Overall, we remain confident about the continued steady scale-up of our multi-product retail lending business with consistent improvement in operating leverage and stable asset quality through the cycle. With this, I hand over the call to Vikash.
Thank you, Jagdeep. Since the inception of Wholesale 2.0 about 3 years ago, we have built gradually the book to 11,295 crore today across our real estate and CML strategy. During this period, we have disbursed 20,000 crore across 313 loans. As you know, in our real estate strategy, we fund real estate projects where we have a total of 150 loans with a total AUM of 8,608 crore. CML focus on providing credit to mid-market companies across key sector, and in this strategy, we have 60 loans with AUM of 2,687 crore. The second quarter of FY26 was quite active for us. In Q2 FY26, our wholesale 2.0 AUM grew by 43% year-on-year to 11,295 crore. We disbursed 2,043 crore across RE and CML segment. This was an increase of 11% YOY in the origination. Origination per loan was 59 crore during Q2, while disbursement amount was 25 crore per loan. The portfolio has an average ticket size of 71 crore and a stable effective interest rate of 14.5%, featuring a well-balanced asset duration and diversification. We continue to see tailwind across RE and CML segment and will grow this book in a calibrated manner through FY26. Repayments were almost 57% of disbursement during Q2, significantly better than expected performance of the book, which continues to benefit from strong sectoral performance and quality partner and asset selection. The legacy AUM are down by 1,472 crore in H1, and this now stands at 5,448 crore, which is less than 6% of total AUM. We are on track to bring this book to below 3,500 crore by the end of year as we guided initially. Moving to our financial performance, in Q2 FY26, we reported our consolidated net profit of 327 crore with a growth of 101% YOY over Q2 FY25 with net profit of 163 crore. Pro forma PBT for growth business stood at 344 crore, growth of 98% YOY over PBT of 173 crore in Q2 FY25. With growth business, OPEX growth of 14% YOY versus income growth of 36% YOY. Operating profit grew by 73% YOY to 687 crore. In Q2 FY26, we reported growth business credit cost of 1.7% versus 1.4% in Q1 26 and 1.6% in FY25. Net positive impact of ECL rebalancing in Q1 FY26 over Q2 FY26, which is 36 basis point, explain this quarter-on-quarter movement in growth business credit cost. With completion of PL merger with PFL in Q2 26, carry forward losses are now available at PFL at combined level. We were thus able to write back taxes which we booked over FY25 and Q1 26 for erstwhile PEL. In Q2 FY26, we reported a tax write-back of 78 crore, which includes DTA of 35 crore. There were some exceptional expense of 81 crore during the quarter. This largely includes merger-related expense of 60 crore and one-off tax expense of 21 crore. Our total GNPA and NNPA ratio stands at 2.6% and 1.8% respectively. Our net worth stands at 27,447 crore with capital adequacy at 20.7%. In Q2 FY26, our cost of borrowing reduced 19 basis point quarter on quarter to 8.9%. We continue to actively diversify our borrowing mix. Securitization and international borrowing shares stand at 18%, while share of borrowing from mutual fund has increased, which is 13% versus 6% in March 24. With these remarks, I would now like to open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take a first question from the line of Prithviraj Patil from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So my First question is on the EIR on the portfolio wholesale 2.0. So if you can just give the split between the fee and the interest portion there, and are we doing structured transactions like to tier two developers here? Because the IRR seems extremely high here.
No, we are not doing any structured transactions. We are these are pure operating loans, and so some of the old kind of structures which are back-ended or which are at holdco level or mezz level, etc. None of those transactions are actually being done. These are plain vanilla loans. You can see that we are only doing 2,000 crores of disbursements a quarter, so it's not a massive number. And this level of business is available at 14%. So this is not a, it's not a problem. You don't have to chase structured transactions for this yield. Given our cost of funds, we'll need to get a 14-ish% IRR for the business to work. And hence we are limiting our appetite to whatever we can get at that price point. And we are getting just enough to satisfy our appetite.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Hey, Avinash.
Yeah, hi. Hi, yeah. Good evening. My question is more on the capital side and growth plan. I mean, of course, on one hand, we are very, very, I would say, less levered for different issues and, of course, growing fast. So if we see like, you know, your 1.5 lakh crore kind of ambition by FY28, if we see the net worth of 27,500 crore, that looks kind of, you know, even for 1.5 lakh crore, kind of AUM, it looks all right. But current, of course, capital adequacy, that will have a lot of adjustments, of course, that is putting at 21-odd%. So now if you were to consider that, okay, some of the, you know, the capital consumption from legacy going away, some of the investment you will be kind of able to monetize. So if you kind of explain how the sort of, you know, capital, you know, development, and of course, you will be organic profit generation. Is how is the journey of capital going to be in this, you know, your journey towards 1.5 lakh eventually? I mean, from which all sources beyond organic profit, you seem the capital will get released. So, from more cover of capital. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Avinash. Aur tumne answer to khud hi de diya question ka. So your question contains all the right answers. That's exactly the way we are thinking about it. Your point is right. At 27,500 crores as a starting point, getting to 1.5 lakh crores without additional raise of capital should be possible in theory. But it does have some of the important caveats that you mentioned, which is that we have a large investment book, larger than most NBFCs. So we need to exit those investment books. That will release a lot of capital for lending. That's an important one for us to do. And of course, as the legacy book goes down, you know, that can also get redeployed into our core growth book. So those will continue to be important components. And as you can see now, our core profit generation engine has started firing more and more every quarter. And you are seeing a steady improvement in ROAUM over the last 4 quarters. You will continue to see it in the future as well, and all that will contribute to our capital as well. So if we are able to get all of these things lined up, then we are probably not looking at a capital raise, of course, certainly not this year, but likely not next year as well. But let's see, you know, never say never in these things. We are open to all possibilities, but it's unlikely that we will require any new capital infusion. As I've mentioned in the past, our internal threshold for evaluating the capital position more deeply is 18%. If capital adequacy falls below that, we will internally start talking about it. I'm not saying that we will immediately raise capital, but we will certainly, you know, get into the conversation on capital at 18%. We don't want to get too close to the regulatory line. But given where we are and given all the levers that we just spoke about, including organic profit growth, I think, you know, we should be able to manage all through FY26 and FY27. But we will keep you posted on this on a regular basis. We also have, you know, some of the, you know, we have some of the extraordinary gains coming up, etc., which is baked into our our profit guidance for the year. So you know, on a full year basis, we have guided for 1,300 to 1,500 crores of profits, of which we have delivered 600 so far in the first half. So you should expect anywhere from 700 to 900 crores in the second half, because we are reiterating that guidance. So all that will contribute towards capital position as well. So we feel, you know, fairly comfortable with where we are on this front.
Okay, thanks. And if sort of one more, I mean, when I see your operating cost guidance, you know, positively being downward revised to 3.25 to 3.75% for retail. So broadly, again, I am drawing that, okay, you're 80-20 or 75-25 ambition of retail wholesale. At the aggregate level, a 3-3.5 kind of OPEX to AUM is a fair assumption?
Yeah, 3 to 3/4, I would say.
Okay, perfect. And lastly, on your Shriram, you know, investment, particularly in the general insurance side. So there are so much of, you know, media report also coming in. So, I mean, what options are open? I mean, is it a kind of a transaction with some strategic investor, or even the going or taking the company public is among the options? Thanks.
Yeah, I don't want to comment on this right now. Like, there is a, you know, all the chatter that's going on in this. All options are on the table. But we don't want to compromise our position by talking a lot about it publicly. Let it play out as it plays out.
Got it. Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to remind participants to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone. Next question is from the line of Kushagra Goel from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kushagra.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question.
Kushagra, you're not audible.
Hello. Is this better?
Yes, please go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. So, thank you for taking my question. It's majorly on the cost of funds side. So, you have said that it's now below 9%. Could you give sort of some guidance about the medium term? Where do you think this can go down to? And are you having some conversations with rating agencies, et cetera, to sort of bring this down?
Yeah. So, firstly, let's talk a little bit about the decline that has happened this quarter. You've seen a 19 basis point decline in cost of borrowing this quarter, of which I would say kind of, I mean, there is a little bit of optics there. I think more sustainably, I think 14 to 15 basis points is probably kind of the more realistic way of thinking about the decline, because my Q1 was overstated a little bit. Q1 cost of borrowing was overstated a little bit because we did a prepayment of a few loans in Q1 and prepayment penalties got applied. So Q1 numbers are overstated by, so that's a 3 or 4 basis points is actually explained by that. So I would say about 15 basis points has been the actual decline, right, in this quarter. But we've not seen a lot of action from banks yet. You can see that about 42% of our borrowing is from banks, and bank MCLRs haven't really come down that much. I expect that play to come only in Q4. My expectation is Q3, not much will change. Q3, you should remain roughly flat to Q2 on cost of borrowing. But Q4, you should see a decline, mostly led by the bank side, with bank MCLR starting to get cut by that time, hopefully, and it's starting to flow through to our numbers. So my expectation is flat in Q3, down another, let's say, 10 basis points in Q4. That's kind of my medium-term expectation. All of this will give us a lot more benefit in the next year when, if, let us say, RBI reduces on the whole by about 120 basis points, I would guess that the impact to us will be about 70 basis points, you know, on cost of borrowing, of which we will probably pass on about 25 to 30 basis points to our customers based on the mix of variable, and the rest could accrue.
Oh, got it. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Kushal.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Pradyumna Ladda, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. Jairam, hi. Just, I think, on the previous question, just to follow up, any conversations going on with the rating agencies?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot about that. Sorry, I forgot to respond to that part of the question. Yeah, yeah, we are discussing with rating agencies kind of, you know, very regularly. every quarter we are presenting our information and you know, to them. I have call scheduled next week as well with our key rating partners. Let's see. See, they have been, the key question from rating agencies' perspective so far has been, yes, the business mix shift has been, has checked all the boxes. Risk stability has come in. That's a check. Legacy book coming down, you know, that's a check. Capital position being strong, that's a check. Liquidity position being really strong and improving, that's a check. But the one area where we have not got a check so far is profitability and whether we can actually deliver profitability on a sustained basis. But with every passing quarter, that that is coming. And at some point of time, I'm sure the rating agencies will take a little bit of a forward-looking view and get constructive on our paper. Of course, I can't speak on their behalf, but I think with every passing quarter, our case is getting stronger. But we'll continue to have discussions with the rating agencies in the hope of being able to convince them over the next few quarters.
Understood. And the number of the 70 basis points reduction in cost of borrowing you mentioned, that's all exclusive of any rating?
Of course. That is just kind of rating action. That's cyclical rather than structural.
Right.
And by the way, that 70 is, I don't mean for that as a guidance. Huh? I'm just saying that that's my estimate. That if RBI cuts by 120 basis points, roughly 70 will come to us. That's an estimate based on historical data. But it depends on the banks what they do. It's not for me to say.
Understood. Thanks, Sharath.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Kamal from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kamal.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. Sir, if you could just highlight firstly on the comments which were passed that there is still some caution in terms of unsecured business loans and used car loans. And also I was seeing that the 90 plus has increased marginally for LAP as well. So if you could just highlight some comments on the asset quality overall.
Yeah. Good question. See, I think it's a good catch on LAP. Yes, there is something there to watch. See, the quarter has been very good for unsecured in general. So unsecured risk has generally either stayed stable or taken a dip. So you can see that in our PL numbers, our digital lending numbers, our microfinance numbers, of course, have fallen very steeply, but also unsecured business loans, which has been the flavor of the last couple of quarters. Even on unsecured business loans, you saw our delinquency fall. So the quarter has actually been good on asset quality for most of the unsecured lending side. Things have been stable to improving. On the secured product side, it has been mostly stable. Used car, which gave us a little bit of a shock last quarter, has slightly marginally improved. I would say LAP, you know, you're right, the delinquencies have gone up a tad during the quarter, but you should also recognize that LAP in absolute terms has been at super duper low risk. If you look at the last 3 years data here, LAP risk has been at the same levels or slightly lower than housing, whereas in LAP we are getting almost 200 basis points higher yield. It doesn't make sense for LAP to remain that low risk for the higher yield that it is getting us. So you are seeing a little bit of normalization there, and I do expect LAP's delinquency to be higher than HL. So it is kind of reverting a little bit to that mean. Whether it is indicative of something underlying and whether there is a risk issue, it's too early to tell. But we are certainly seeing a reversion to a more average risk performance in the LAP business compared to the abnormally good environment that we have had for the last 2.5 years.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. And if I can ask one more question, that in terms of our AUM expansion over next few years, which are the products where we would be more focused on going forward, or and if any new product which we are planning to add on?
Yeah, so you're going to continue to see mortgages, which is HL plus LAP, continue to be the anchor, you know, part of our portfolio. But the share of mortgages is going to either remain stable or slightly go down, right? So that's what you should expect. We would like our unsecured lending business to go up. We have unsecured at about 17% of our overall book. We would like for that to be about 25% of overall book, or about 30% of retail. The last year and a half, 2 years have not been conducive. to increasing the share of unsecured given the risk environment. So we have not actually increased it. It has remained stable. But in the medium term, we would like to see 25% of our overall book as unsecured compared to the 17% today. So that's something that you should expect to see. So all our unsecured businesses, we will keep kind of finding ways to accelerate when the opportunity is right. In terms of new businesses, we have said this publicly before, so we will restate the businesses that we want, newly launched businesses that we want to scale is microfinance, and a new business that we don't yet have but we are in the process of launching is gold. We will launch it, but we'll be very slow. We are doing it organically, so we will take it very slowly. So as investors, you might not notice it for a while, for a couple of years, because the scale is going to be really small. But as a management team, we have started work on it, and we have put the team together, and we got a strategy down, and you'll start seeing some execution in the second half of this year.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Just to follow up, if I could ask, what is your view on the overall gold loan portfolio? We are seeing a lot of aggression amongst all the NBFCs. They are aggressively, everyone has some aggressive plans to add branches over the next 1 to 2 years.
Yes.
And so what's your view on that portfolio as well?
Yeah,
that
see,
would be my...
see, gold is the kind of, is a little bit of a last bastion left in the lending space right now. Like, it's a large product, underlying product has not been monetized yet, so the market size is still small compared to the overall potential, and the yields are still relatively attractive. And of course, cyclically, the gold is going through, you know, probably the best period in the cycle. So it's natural that you're seeing a lot of interest. If the cycle goes down, you'll probably see a lot of this interest fade away. That's okay. Like, these things happen. But remember that for a product, we all know the size of holdings of Indian households, etc. All that data is known to everyone. The size of the potential size of the market, the TAM, is extremely large. And not enough people are in that market. The total size of the number of players in that market compared to, let us say, a microfinance market where there are like 100 players, you know, chasing a 4 lakh crore opportunity. The number of players in gold is still very, very low. It's natural that you will see more competition, and it is also natural that as more competition comes in, the economics of the business will deteriorate a little bit. All those things you have to assume, and you should also take into account the fact that the business is at a cyclical high right now, and it can only get worse from here. It cannot get any better. So whoever is getting into this business today should absolutely keep in mind that the economics next year are going to be worse than the economics this year in this business. So we are fully aware of all these dynamics. We will conservatively and very slowly build it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Like, we are not wedded to the idea. But it's an important product for our customer segment. So it is something that we want to own.
Okay. Thank you so much for all the answers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Prithviraj Patil from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, Prithvi.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So my first question is on the $140 million contingent income that is supposed to be coming in this year from Piramal Imaging. I just wanted to know if there's any update on that, or are we expecting that to come for the next year?
Yeah. No, it will come. There's no update. Like, the transaction is completed. So, but the way the transaction works is that the consideration is due to us only in Q4. The actual exact amount calculation will happen based on calendar year 25 numbers. So once calendar year 25 gets over, they will calculate the numbers and the exact consideration will get finalized. So we continue to expect the consideration to come to us in Q4 of our fiscal. So nothing has changed on that front. There is nothing new to report on that situation. The transaction completed in July of this year, so not much has happened since then.
Okay, and another question on the on page 22 of the slide, we've mentioned something that the amortization fee dropped in FY25 and FY26 compared to FY24.
Yeah.
Because there was an amortization processing fee. Just one wanted clarification why we were not amortizing it earlier.
Yeah, we were not amortizing it earlier. There is some historical reasons for that. And the fee income line was so small in the earlier years that it didn't matter. And the auditors also didn't insist on it because the amounts were too small. And some historical reasons, it was not getting amortized. But in FY25, starting April 1, 2024, we started amortizing it. So you saw a big dip in our fee income earning in FY25. And since then, because the back book has slowly gotten created, you've seen that that fee income line slowly move up. So that's been there's no particular reason for why that date was chosen. It is just that the book had become large enough at that time, and the fee income line had become large enough that that it made sense to do a more standardized kind of accounting approach there.
Yeah, a last question on the one-time expense that we've taken. It mentions that there's a one-off tax expense and some 60 crores of expense related to the merger. So if you could just throw some light on the expense.
Because you want to talk about that?
On merger cost, we have to pay 50 crore as stamp duty on various assets which are moving and 10 crore are like professional fees. Regarding this 20 crore, this pertains to that imaging game which we sold way back in 2018. The tax assessment has been concluded in this quarter, leading a demand of 21 crore.
I hope that explains the total 81 crores.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mayank Mistry from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I had question on the wholesale book, mainly in the CMML AUM by ratings that you have given on slide number 29, we see that close to, you know, 70%, less than 70% of the book you have is below A minus rated.
Correct.
In the CMML book.
Yeah.
And over the years, over last few years, we have seen that a lot of NBFCs have actually moved out of this segment completely, or they are doing it very conservatively to only the A and better rated companies. So what gives us confidence to, you know, continue this book with, you know, the, what gives you confidence to do fresh disbursals in this book?
Right. So the, Mike, the point you're making about A and below, or triple B plus and below, let us say, or the entire triple B family, that is the play for a non-AAA rated NBFC today. If you're a AAA rated NBFC, then you can go lend to a AA rated company or an A company or an A plus company. But if I'm a AA rated NBFC, which is what we are, I cannot lend to an A or A plus company. There just isn't enough, like the difference in cost of funds for us and for them is not large enough for us to actually lend to them. So our game is always going to be two notches below where we are. And we are AA. So our two notches below is going to be triple B plus. So triple B is generally going to be the area for an NBFC like us. Of course, if I am a Tata Capital or an Aditya Birla Capital or a Bajaj Housing, I might have a different play. I can actually target A-rated entities and lend to them. As PNL Finance, that is not our game. Our game is very much in triple B. We are priced for it because we are charging 14%, right? So we are priced for it. We are doing operating loans. We are keeping ticket sizes really small in this business. We are keeping ticket sizes at 50 crores. So the ticket sizes are small, tenures are short, it's unstructured, the deals are plain vanilla, right? And yield is strong enough. So that's why the businesses turned out to be quite profitable in the last two to three years. Let's see how this plays out. Then the size might not be very big of this opportunity. So at even in the long term future, you might never see us get beyond, let's say, 10,000 crores. We might not be able to grow the business beyond that. But till that space, till that size, opportunity is available for this type of business.
Okay, sir, got it. But what would be the similar mix for the real estate book then?
Of a rating. Real estate may are SPV banega na, to wahan par to rating ka sawal nahi hai. Externally rated hongi nahi wo SPVs.
Wo to, as per risk, I mean,
देखो हमारे सेम फंडा आप लगाओ कि जहां 14% का बिजनेस पॉसिबल है दैट्स द बिजनेस दैट वी विल डू राइट एंड इफ द बिजनेस इज डूएबल ओनली 11 और 12% एट आवर करंट कॉस्ट ऑफ फंड्स दैट माइट नॉट वर्क इफ गॉड विलिंग इफ वी आर एबल टू गेट अ रेटिंग अपग्रेड एटसेट्रा वी माइट बी एबल टू एक्चुअली टारगेट स्लाइटली कैन ऑफ यू नो बेटर रिस्क प्रोफाइल्स एज वेल बट टुडे प्योर ऑपरेटिंग प्रोजेक्ट्स where all approvals are there, where no structuring is required and lending at the project level, not to holdco entities, etc., in an unstructured fashion for a relatively short duration, That's where we want to enter. And our ticket sizes need to be on average less than 200 crores. Those are our constraints. Within those constraints, we still believe, let's say a 20-25,000 crore opportunity can get created. AUM of that size can get created. We are still far away from there, but we can see in the 4 lakh crore AUM market that real estate is, we think this opportunity that I spoke about, something like a 20-25,000 crore we can create. So we will keep working towards that outcome. In the interim, if we are able to get a rating upgrade, etc., and we are able to go to even better rated clients, even better. But for now, we believe our current strategy can get us to that size.
Oh, okay. So nearly you want to make a spread of maybe 5-6% at least in this book, right?
Yes, exactly. Without that, the math will not work.
Got it. Okay, okay. Sure, sir. Thanks.
Having said that, I also want to hasten to add that we are not also kind of going out there yield chasing. So it's not like we are chasing an 18% business, which kind of, let's say, distressed funds or some other special funds might be tackling with highly structured transactions. We are not in that market. We are in a very narrow band of interest rate where we want operating asset loans. We do not want structured loans. So we are not in the structured market, so you will not see us be in the, let's say, 17-18% range where you'll see a lot of funds.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Hey, Abhijit.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, sir. Good evening. So again, just on asset quality, I mean, while you've already spoken about it, but just double-checking with you, today none of the retail segments where we are present, we are seeing any risks, so as to say, right? I mean, risks which were there maybe a quarter, 2 quarters back, right? They kind of continue at the same levels. But in this quarter, we have not seen any of the other retail product segments exhibit a higher risk, right? Is that a fair understanding?
Correct. Yes, that's fair. So, yeah, the big increase in retail product all happened in Q2 and Q3 last year. You saw a slight reduction in Q4, and things since then have been stable at that level. So Q4, Q1, Q2 have been relatively at the same level. Nothing much has happened. And that is true in delinquency. That is true in credit costs. Kind of across all risk metrics, that has been true. I will also say that businesses like unsecured business loans or kind of MSME unsecured, where risk reached a certain peak in Q3 last year, they haven't come down from that peak. So things haven't gotten significantly better in MSME unsecured. It is stable, but it has not gotten better. So I don't want us to start celebrating too quickly on this front. But yes, nothing has gotten worse this quarter. This quarter, by and large, has been neutral to positive on all product categories.
Okay. And so lastly, I mean, mortgages, which is home loans and LAP, right? LAP in itself, right, I mean, at an industry level, probably we are seeing the kind of growth that we've never seen earlier. So one of the other things that keeps getting discussed is, are we seeing some consolidation of unsecured loans into a secured loan, which is a LAP product today?
Yeah.
And at the same time, even home loans for us, you'll acknowledge, right, have been very strong.
Yes.
Right? And while we're not seeing that at an industry level,
yes,
mortgages, right?
Yep.
Going. So, and if we talk about our, right, we are not really doing prime, right? The yields that we have in home loans, right?
Yes.
I will not really call them very small ticket home loans either, but they're somewhere in between, right? Between
right.
Prime and what we call as small ticket affordable loans. So is this a segment which is doing particularly well and which is where we are seeing such strong growth in home loans? Or how would we want to explain that?
That's a good observation.
The industry is still struggling.
Yeah, no, it's a very good observation. We are also kind of trying to understand this deeper. Like, how are we getting this kind of growth in a market when everybody else is struggling or many others are struggling? But I think the point you mentioned in your question, Abhijit, is the core part of the answer. This segment that we are in, which is kind of that in-between segment, not the larger ticket prime stuff, but not the very small ticket affordable housing stuff either. That in-between segment, that semi-urban India, is doing well. If you see kind of data from CIBIL, etc. as well, semi-urban is where much of the growth is happening. The overall business is growing at 8% or 9% for the industry, but if you split it by semi-urban, urban and rural, you see that semi-urban is where most of the growth is. As it happens, Piramal is totally focused on semi-urban. That is our game. And so we are actually getting that tailwind because of the segment choice and geography choice that that we have. And on top of that, some of the work that we have done in using technology and AI has created what we internally think of as like super highways, where sales managers and kind of sales staff productivity can be really, really high because applications that come into the system are on a super highway where there are no bottlenecks, kind of things flow a lot more quickly, etc. So conversions are better. For us overall. So certainly our investments in technology and AI are helping in converting a lot more of the leads and potential interest into final business.
Got it. So just one last follow-up. While you spoke about LAP, this sub-segment, right, which is micro LAP, interesting what is happening at the industry level, especially small ticket LAP loans, maybe less than 1 million. Would you like to comment on what's really happening? Is the risk getting better or are we in that part of a cycle where maybe it will take a few more quarters for things to start getting better? But I ask you, we spoke about UBL, we spoke about MFI risk, right? I mean, looking stable to getting better at some point in time. Likewise, I mean, MicroLab, I mean, are we seeing something?
MicroLab, I think, will get worse. It will not get better in the short term. It will get worse. We have a small micro lab business. How much do we have, Jagdeep? We just have a couple of hundred crores. So we don't have much of a lab business. We just started it a year ago. But I can see the signs there. The situation is tough. So I would expect that business to be under some stress for a couple quarters at least, and I don't see it in the same space as where UBL is or where microfinance is, which I think their worst is very much microfinance. 100% the worst is behind. UBL, you could argue that it's still at the peak, not on the other side of the hill. MicroLab, I don't think has reached the top of the hill yet. I think it'll get worse before it gets better.
Got it. This is very useful, sir. Thank you very much. And I wish you and the team the very best. Firstly, greetings to you.
Thank you, Abhijit. Listing day is in 2 weeks, Abhijit. Just saying.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference to Mr. Jairam Sridharan for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Hey, thank you very much, everyone, for participating in the call. I know it's been a very busy day and there are a lot of FS companies that are declaring results. We appreciate and are grateful for the time that you have taken to understand Piramal's numbers. Thank you for participating. And on behalf of the Piramal family, we would like to wish all of you a very happy Diwali and festive season. Thank you very much and have a good evening.
Thank you, members of the management team. On behalf of Piramal Finance Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.